The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
The court is in special session this afternoon to receive the resolutions of the bar of the Supreme Court in tribute to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The court recognizes the Solicitor General.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. At a meeting today of the bar of this court, resolutions memorializing our deep respect and affection for Justice Ginsburg were adopted unanimously. Today, the bar of this court gathers to pay tribute to Justice Ginsburg, a pathmarking jurist who served the nation for 27 years as an Associate Justice of this court. Justice Ginsburg dedicated her life to making real the Constitution's promise of equality under the law and the framers' aspiration that we build a more perfect union. She helped transform the landscape of this country, fighting discrimination and forging opportunities for all persons to achieve their potential. All told, she authored over 1,100 opinions, each a model of her characteristic efficiency, clarity, and decency. The Torah's command, "Justice, justice, thou shalt pursue," graced the wall of her chambers and inspired her in everything she did. Joan Ruth Bader was born in Brooklyn in 1933, the daughter and granddaughter of immigrants. From early on, Justice Ginsburg was heavily influenced by her mother, who, she said, taught her two lessons. In Justice Ginsburg's words, one was to be a lady, and that meant conduct yourself civilly. Don't let emotions like envy or anger get in your way. And the other was to be independent, which was an unusual message for mothers of that time to be giving their daughters. At Cornell University, Justice Ginsburg studied government under Robert Cushman, who inspired her with stories of lawyers standing up for the First Amendment during the McCarthy era. It was also at Cornell, on a blind date in 1950, that she met Martin Ginsburg. The justice liked to say that Marty was the first boy I ever dated who cared I had a brain. What followed was a marriage for the ages, one that modeled for the world her vision of gender equality. The Ginsburgs moved to Oklahoma, where Marty served in the Army, and the couple welcomed a daughter, Jane. In 1956, the couple moved to Cambridge for Marty to continue and the justice to begin studies at Harvard Law School. One of nine women in a class of over 500, Justice Ginsburg earned top grades and was selected for the Harvard Law Review. During her second year, Marty was diagnosed with cancer. With her superhuman work ethic, the justice managed to support Marty, care for Jane, keep up her own studies, and coordinate Marty's classmates to take notes for him, which she typed every night. After Marty recovered, the Ginsburgs moved to New York for his new job. Justice Ginsburg transferred to Columbia Law School and graduated tied for first in her class. But she struggled to find a job because, as she recounted, she had three strikes against her. She was a woman, a mother, and Jewish. Her mentor, Professor Gerald Gunther, finally secured her a clerkship by promising to provide a male replacement should Justice Ginsburg not work out. Judge Edmund Palmieri later referred to the justice as one of his all-time best clerks. In 1963, Justice Ginsburg joined the Rutgers faculty. She was paid less than her male counterparts because, as the dean explained, she had a husband with a good job. Teaching on a year-to-year contract, Justice Ginsburg hid her pregnancy with her son James until she had the next year's contract in hand. In 1972, Columbia hired Justice Ginsburg to become its first tenured female faculty member. That same year, the justice helped found the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. As head of the project, she argued six gender discrimination cases in this court. In the first, she represented an Air Force officer challenging the military's policy of automatically providing certain benefits to military wives, but not husbands. Her argument was a masterclass, and her client prevailed 8-1. Throughout the 70s, Justice Ginsburg successfully litigated cases promoting gender equality, ranging from the routine exemption of women from jury pools to the denial of Social Security benefits to male surviving spouses. In 1980, President Carter nominated Justice Ginsburg to the D.C. Circuit, and in 1993, President Clinton nominated her to this court. At her confirmation hearing, the justice proudly introduced herself as the child of immigrants. She reflected, "What has become of me could happen only in America. Like so many others, I owe so much to the entry this nation afforded to people yearning to breathe free." The Senate confirmed her by a vote of 96-3. Over the next 27 years, Justice Ginsburg left an indelible mark on the law in countless ways, too many to list here. Central to her legacy are the opinions in which she championed the idea that all persons should be afforded what she called equal citizenship stature under the Constitution. For example, in her landmark opinion for the court in United States versus Virginia, she wrote that the Constitution prohibits relying on generalizations to deny any person equal opportunity to aspire, achieve, participate in, and contribute to society based on their individual talents and capacities. She consistently voted to bolster the democratic process, defending, in her words, the core principle that voters should choose their representatives, not the other way around. She urged the court to reckon with real-world power dynamics, vividly describing a humiliating strip search of a 13-year-old schoolgirl. And she served as the court's resident expert on matters of procedure, emphasizing systemic integrity, fair access to the courts, and the need for judicial redress for government wrongdoing, with fairness always as the cornerstone. Justice Ginsburg was a lifelong optimist. Some of that optimism stemmed from her belief that people of different ideological views could share the same faith in the Constitution and this court's role in safeguarding its principles. Her famous friendship with Justice Scalia is a perfect example. She embraced their shared reverence for the Constitution and this court. Justice Ginsburg will be remembered as one of our country's great heroes. Her commitment to truth, justice, and equality changed the course of American history and inspired millions across the world. Those of us who were lucky enough to know the justice will remember her brilliance, her love for Marty and her family, her quiet humor, her unparalleled work ethic, her tireless attention to getting every detail just right, her courage in battling cancer, her great love of this country, and above all, her abiding goodness. And I will remember the extraordinary year I spent as a law clerk in her chambers, witnessing up close her grace, her devotion to the law, and her unyielding spirit. Gathered here together, looking back at her life, the members of the bar of the Supreme Court express our admiration and respect for the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, our loss upon her death, our appreciation for her contributions to the law and the nation, and our gratitude for her example of a life well lived. On behalf of the Supreme Court bar, it is my privilege to present to the court the resolutions adopted today so that the Attorney General may move their inscription on the court's permanent record.
Thank you, General Prelogar. The court recognizes the Attorney General of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The bar of the court met today to honor the life and legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court from 1993 to 2020. Justice Ginsburg was brilliant, courageous, and principled. She believed deeply in the capacity of the law to fulfill our country's fundamental promise of equality. And she believed deeply in our Constitution. As she wrote in her opinion for the court in United States versus Virginia, she believed in its story of the extension of constitutional rights and protections to people once ignored or excluded. I first caught a glimpse of Ruth Bader Ginsburg in this courtroom in 1978 when she came here to argue Duren versus Missouri. The court's law clerks were crowded into the wings of the courtroom to hear her. Our justices had told us that she was the best advocate we would hear that term. And she did not disappoint. She won the case 8-1. As it turned out, that would be the last argument she made before the court. 2 years later, she was appointed to the D.C. Circuit, and 13 years after that, she was appointed to the Supreme Court. But it had been an amazing run as a litigator. Like Thurgood Marshall on behalf of Equal Rights for Black Americans, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a chief tactician in a campaign for equal rights for women. Beginning in 1971, she filed more than 20 Supreme Court briefs challenging legislative distinctions between the sexes, including distinctions that disadvantaged men, in order to establish the principle of equal treatment. She argued 6 cases before this court, losing only 1. Just to describe some of those cases is to recall how different the world was then. In Duren, the court struck down a Missouri law that made jury duty optional for women and only for women. In Weinberger versus Weisenfeld, the court struck down a provision that permitted a deceased man's Social Security benefits to be paid to his widow, but did not permit a deceased woman's benefits to be paid to her widower. And in one of the first cases she argued and she briefed, Reed versus Reed, the court unanimously struck down a state probate statute that said, quote, males must be preferred to females, close quote, in appointing estate administrators. But if we think the 1970s were different, you should hear just a snippet of Justice Ginsburg's own description of what it was like in 1956, when she was one of only 9 women in a Harvard Law School class of more than 500. Quote, women were not admitted to faculty club dining tables. One could invite one's father, but not one's wife or mother, to the law review banquet. And the old periodical room at Lamont Library was closed to women. In 1958, the justice's husband, Marty, whom all of us who knew him loved, graduated from Harvard a year ahead of the justice and received a job offer in New York. Justice Ginsburg asked the then dean to let her finish the requirements for her Harvard degree at Columbia. Famously, and to Harvard's everlasting regret, the dean denied her request. So the justice transferred to Columbia anyway, served as an editor for the Law Review, and tied for first in her class. But in those days, even that was not enough. A Supreme Court justice turned her down for a clerkship, telling the dean of the Columbia Law School that he, quote, just wasn't ready to hire a woman. Nor could she find a job in a corporate law firm. But as a justice noted in 2009, that wasn't all bad. If she had gotten the job, she said, she would have been a retired law firm partner instead of a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. I do not need to tell anyone in this room how different the world would have been had that happened. During the justice's 27 years on the court, she influenced every area of the law, from issues that made the headlines, like equal justice for women, to highly complex questions of civil procedure, without which our court system could not function. Everyone knows what an intellectual force she was on the court. Every lawyer who appeared before her knows how incisive her questioning was at oral argument, and everyone who reads her concise and elegant opinions can see her commitment to, in her own words, get it right and keep it tight. Justice Ginsburg was not only one of the country's brightest legal minds. She was also a beacon of civility and collegiality. She revered the role of the federal judiciary and this court in particular in upholding the rule of law. She understood the necessity of an independent judiciary to our democracy. Essential to the rule of law in any land, she said, is an independent judiciary. Judges not under the thumb of other branches of government, and therefore to administer, equipped to administer the law impartially. She strived to be that kind of judge, and she succeeded. Justice Ginsburg was also an enormously caring person. In her personal life, she supported Marty during his battle with cancer and then fought her own. And in her professional life, she was an extraordinary mentor to her law clerks. Justice Ginsburg's impact on this court and on our country will be felt for generations to come. She is and always will be deeply missed. May her memory be a blessing. Mr. Chief Justice, on behalf of the lawyers of this nation and in particular the members of this court's bar, I respectfully request that the resolutions presented to you in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg be accepted by the court and that together with the chronicle of these proceedings, they be ordered kept for all time in the records of this court.
Your motion is granted, and the resolutions and chronicle will be made part of the permanent record of the court. Thank you, General Garland and General Prelogger, for your presentations in memory of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We also extend our appreciation to Judge John Owens and Amanda Tyler and members of the Committee on Resolutions and to co-chairs Judge Paul Watford and Hanjin Kim and members of the Arrangements Committee. This court's tradition of a bar memorial dates back nearly two centuries to Chief Justice John Marshall's passing in 1835. Today is the first time a woman serving as Solicitor General of the United States, a former law clerk to Justice Ginsburg, no less, is presenting memorial resolutions to the court. Today is the first time that four seats on the bench are held by women as we receive those resolutions. As far as tributes to Justice Ginsburg go, these facts are a good place to start. Although this memorial tradition runs to Chief Justice John Marshall, a bar memorial for Justice Ginsburg harkens back in other ways to the one held in this building for Justice Thurgood Marshall 30 years ago. Perhaps in league with him and no one else, Ruth Bader Ginsburg had already used the law to change our country profoundly for the better as an advocate prior to becoming a member of this court. The Solicitor General mentioned Justice Ginsburg's first appearance at the lectern was 50 years ago in Frontiero v. Richardson. Her 10-minute amicus allotment was uninterrupted by the justices, maybe because her dear friend Antonin Scalia was some years from joining the court. Instead of a lawyer appearing before this court and others, Justice Ginsburg might have preferred a career as an opera star. When asked, she did not disavow such an interest, simply noting that there was the catch that she could not sing. So she instead served as the impresaria of the court's musicales, a tradition she presided over beginning in 2002, attracting renowned artists to perform in the East Conference Room, giving us all respite and helping to bring us together. But this courtroom was her stage. In the six cases she argued here, of which she won five, she articulated an enduring vision of the equality of women and men as a constitutional principle. In 1980, she was appointed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. She wrote more than 700 opinions as a circuit judge, earning a reputation as a careful, prudent jurist. In 1993, President William Clinton appointed then-Judge Ginsburg to be the 107th member of this court. The transition was seamless. Justice Ginsburg's first opinion of the court issued on December 13, 1993, a mere 2 months and 1 day after argument in a complicated retirement benefits case. She earned her reputation for speed straight out of the gate. In the October term 2007, Justice Ginsburg and I tied, each of us releasing an opinion on December 4. Coming off the bench, I made sure Ruth recognized that fact, but she shook her head and said no. Under our usual protocol, she pointed out, she had announced her opinion from the bench first. So she remained the champion. Justice Ginsburg was rightly proud that she never slowed down and never sacrificed precision, clarity, or technical excellence. She was our resident expert in civil procedure and federal courts, which was just fine with the rest of us. Justice Ginsburg's encyclopedic knowledge of all things opera was not matched with much familiarity concerning more plebeian pastimes. At one musicale, we surprised her by having her meet Cal Ripken. The Iron Woman meets the Iron Man, two courageous leaders who work through any challenge without missing a step. The audience thought it was great. The point was, I think, lost on the justice, who did, however, find it interesting that Ripken was married to a Maryland state judge. Now, to be fair, I am sure the justice was surprised, if not shocked, that I did not recognize many of the opera stars she would discuss at lunch. Justice Ginsburg inspired artists and young women around the world, to be sure, but justices and lawyers in our system as well. That aspect of her influence was purposeful, guided by a belief that the adversarial court system operates in service of the rule of law that helps people who disagree to live together. Fight for the things that you care about, she would say, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. Her voice was soft, and the cadence of her speech was measured. You had to listen to her carefully, which I think was the point. Justice Ginsburg and her remarkable husband, Martin Ginsburg, enlivened the court's family. He was not only a distinguished Georgetown law professor and outstanding conversationalist, but also a master baker who sent cakes for her colleagues' birthdays. She would craft direct, efficient, written greetings, such as, "It's your birthday, so Marty baked a cake." Now, as time wore on, Justice Ginsburg somehow developed a new public persona, the notorious RBG, a rock star, a cultural icon. Little girls started showing up on Halloween dressed as RBG. It was an easy costume, any kind of black robe, black-rimmed glasses, and a white jabot or other style of collar. RBG products flooded the market. My favorite was a small candy tin with Ruth's picture on it beneath the word "judgments." Now, to be clear, Ruth absolutely loved every minute of it. On the bench, she was often in dissent. But it would be a mistake to think of her as anything other than relentlessly optimistic in the long run. She happily cited our nation's motto, "E pluribus unum," out of many, one. It is the main aspiration, she would say. It was her hope for our country and our world. Asked just a few years before her passing how she would like to be remembered, she said, "Someone who used whatever talent she had to do her work to the very best of her ability and to help repair tears in our society, to make things a little better through the use of whatever ability she has." Justice Ginsburg was a woman of conviction, courage, and quiet compassion. Small in stature, she stands as a giant in the history of this court. Soft in speech, her voice will ring out from the pages of the U.S. reports for generations to come.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday at 10 o'clock.